This ROFM podcast was brought to you with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Greetings, everybody. You're listening to a program called Avant Gardening, coming from the Wairarapa, New Zealand. Our presenters are Margaret, Anna-Marie and Marnie. In this series of programs, we examine how the world is changing and the effect on gardening and producing food. We'll be looking at different systems and approaches to gardening, their principles and ideas, as well as examples of these approaches and ideas. And today, we're going to jump into the world of myths and woo-woo.
And magic.
So, Anna-Marie, should we start with the copper nails in the trees?
Well, we'll just start with a sort of a general, a few issues that I have, obviously, with the sort of the magic and the woo-woo and the myth, is that often when people are talking about these things, there's a whole belief system behind it, which is absolutely fine. If you want to believe in whatever, that's cool. But when you're touting it as actually being
science
and real and saying this is the absolute truth, this is you know, this works, I want it, because I come from a scientific background, I want to see the science, I want to see a control and then one variable and then the results, and I want it to be replicated and I want it to be done over several years, because that's a bit complicated, but that is how you do proper science. This is none of this kind of I just whacked it on and look at all my things and aren't they magnificent? I go, yeah, but where's your control? And they're going, oh.
So when you're talking about control, you're talking about a placebo group, effectively.
It's a placebo group. It is something that when you change one variable, and it's only one variable, so you have a garden system set up and then you divide it into various plots and then you go, okay, so some of these are going to have the thing that I'm putting on there, whether it's biochar, whether I'm using copper tools, whether I'm using electro gardening techniques or whatever, or slug bait or whatever, and then you change that one variable and the control group has exactly the same, all of the same things going into it with the water and the fertilizer or whatever you use as the other group, but it just doesn't have that one thing that is you're testing for. And that's what you're testing. You're testing that hypothesis, does this make a difference or does it not? You know, that's the thing. And it's if that isn't done, then I'm really sorry, but I'm not going to believe that that's actually a real thing, yeah. You know. And it's a tricky thing, and we get this so much in gardening. There's just so much magic, myth, and woo-woo. And it's disturbing, yes. Because it is not. There's a lot of money to be made with magic beans. You know, there's an awful lot of companies out there that are touting a lot of stuff that has not been scientifically proven. It's not hard to do scientific trials either.
Yes.
You know, but it's just kind of.
Now you've just destroyed my lovely vision of Jack and the Beanstalk and the magic beans. With a bean that grew and grew and grew.
It did.
Yeah, so maybe that was a gardening myth.
I think there was a whole heap of metaphors going on there. Yeah, I'm not quite sure what they were.
I think as well as. It depends a lot on where you're gardening and how you're gardening, because every property is different, as we've previously discussed, and the conditions in every country and every area are different. So what works in some areas simply won't work in others. I know there's plenty of people down the South Island that wish they could grow lemons and other citrus, but it's just too bloody cold.
Yeah.
But up in Auckland, just about every garden's got a lemon tree in it. You know,
because of the
ground and the weather and the average temperature and the amount of frost that they get and all those other variables. Yeah. But certainly within what Anna's saying here, within that scientific method, I know certainly the Ferti companies are really red hot on this when they do a lot of testing for new products and even retesting old products. It's about having a big space which is uniform, and it's treated in exactly the same way across the board, but it's divided up into sections.
Mm.
So you put not just the different fertilisers on, but different strengths of fertilisers on.
Okay, so they can measure
what's the optimum.
So again, it's that scientific measure.
But you have to have something on one side which isn't subject to any of those treatments, so you can make the comparison between the two.
Yeah,
and it's like trying to compare, I don't know, washing powders. If you can't see the before and after, or you can't see the difference that something is making, then why would you bother putting it on?
Yeah.
It has to be objective. It has to be measurable.
It does. It does. I'm all for the scientific
process.
And I think that's important.
Mm.
I also think that if you're going to tout something as a miracle product from a advertising perspective, there has to be a certain amount of evidence behind that. You can't just tell people it's a wonder product and please send me $400 and I'll send you a pack, because the advertising people get a bit upset about that if you can't support those claims. Probably less so for gardening stuff. I know they get really wrapped around the axles about it for anything to do with personal care.
Yes.
But it's the same process.
Do go around.
Oh,
I want to talk about the electro gardening.
Oh, should we do the copper nail?
Let's do the copper nail first.
Okay.
So, and we'll get to the electro gardening.
So the copper nail thing, I first came up against this when I was about 13 in my horticulture class. And my horticulture teacher had a bit of a moment and was quite stroppy about this. And he said, right, I'm going to teach you about scientific method and the myth of the copper nails being banged into peach trees and nectarine trees. Because what happens is that nectarines and peaches often get a disease called peach leaf curl.
Yes.
And it's
seen that.
Yes. Mm. Yes. So when the little flowers come out and then the little leaves come out and it's all looking rather lovely, and then all of a sudden, almost overnight, everything turns septic and you've got these twisted up little curled thingies with these red blisters on, and then it just looks absolutely devastating, and you go, And then some redhead on a unicycle comes cycling past and goes, what you want to do is whack a copper nail into it and that'll solve all your problems. So people get out there with their little copper nails, or they, you know, putting copper around the bottom of their trees and things, and they're whacking this copper nail into the tree, and then all the leaves fall off, because that's what happens with peach leaf curl, and then it's incredible. Green leaves start to grow and they go, oh, it's amazing, it worked. No, it didn't, because that's the life cycle of peach leaf curl on these things. All the leaves fall off and then new leaves grow every time. This is what happens. There was no control.
Okay.
If they had done this, or they had two nectarines or three peaches or whatever, and they put a copper nail in one and not a copper nail in the other,
the leaves would fall at the
exactly
same time.
Exactly the same thing would happen. It means absolutely nothing. But you can spray copper oxychloride, which is a copper spray, but that works in a completely different method.
That's what I was getting at.
A fungicide. It kills off the fungi that is actually causing the peach leaf curl. But you have to do that. But you can spray when you've got the curly leaves, and then you go, oh, look, that worked too, because everything fell off and then the green leaves came back. But the copper oxychloride doesn't work like that either. It has to work from as a protectant from when those
buds are before the leaf starts to curl.
Yeah. So
that's why they say spray before burst. Yeah.
And it is really, really specific. You have to spray a lot, and copper is not the most safest material. We're not talking organic phosphates here. But you've got to be very careful around your chickens, because chickens can get copper toxicity quite easily. Da, da, da.
And sheep as well.
So you've got to be very careful with copper. So anyway, where were we going with this? Scientific method. Copper nails, don't bang things into your tree. Don't do that.
Because you might also introduce other things.
Absolutely.
You keep damaging your tree trunks and whatever you call it. You know, things get in there as well. Yes,
but I see this all the time on Facebook. Every spring, my peach has got peach leaf curl, and they've got whack a nail. It's like, oh, for goodness sake, please stop doing that.
Yeah.
My granddad said, yeah, huh?
Okay. So that was two things there with the copper nails. First off, plant something local. I got some peach trees. The four peach trees that sit up by the car park by the side of the house at my place are from a very old tree from out the back of Carston. I think I've picked maybe three or four curly leaves off that in the last 7 years. They just don't get it.
I've got the same tree.
Or if they get it, they get it very, very mildly, very mildly.
Oh, fantastic.
And it's and it's well worth that prevention rather than cure approach. And the peaches taste really great as well. You know, that's a bonus bonus. The banging anything into a tree is not really a great idea.
No.
Quick story here. My uncle was a forester back in the UK for many years. Where he lived on an estate of houses, next door neighbour had a huge tree that leaned right over the fence, and he asked this guy to trim it back. Said, "Oh, I'll trim it back." The guy threatened him with court if he touched his tree. And it all got very nasty in the end. So one night he snuck out there with a bunch of nails and banged them all into the tree in a ring around the tree. Tree lasted about 2 years before it was dead and they had to take it out.
Mm.
And it was a good established tree. And he would, and he's passed on now, which is the reason.
So we can talk about him. And we don't know his name.
You don't know his name. But when he told me this story, he said, "If the guy had just let me trim it back, I'd have been absolutely fine with that and he could have kept his tree, but he pissed me off." So he went round and he nailed it.
But actually,
nails into
it has another
tree.
Side to that. If you do have a tree that's difficult to get rid of, just hammer nails into it.
Basically,
Okay.
And I'm not sure what the science is behind that, but the fact that he hadn't just put one in, he put a whole ring of them in.
I imagine he just introduced a heap of diseases, to be honest.
Quite possibly. They were probably rusty six-inch nails. I don't know whether they were copper nails. I don't know the story in that much detail. I was just absolutely delighted that...
But I've always thought, don't hammer things in. Mind you, I mean, we've just got a mad tree house, as you know, which has nails in it. And I notice the tree is dead, actually.
Yeah, but it
made a nice treehouse. But yes, so hammering things or wire around trees or odd things like that, I would be very nervous.
When you've got to come along and chainsaw it down one day too.
Oh, yes.
You know, that doesn't end well for your chainsaw.
No.
Yes. No.
So tell us about the copper tools, Marnie. I know this is the biodynamic thingy, because you're quite keen on copper tools.
No, not so much really. I just think they're pretty, quite honestly.
Oh, it's an aesthetic thing. We're very scientific. I thought you were channeling the ancient alien library.
Not quite. I just think I love the colour of copper.
Okay.
And I think the copper tools, particularly because they usually come with a beautifully turned wooden handle, and they really appeal to my aesthetic sense. They really do. And I've had a couple of these kind of tools, and they just feel very nice in your hand, and they're very nice to use because they're usually pretty expensive. They're very well made. Yeah. They're not some nasty plastic knockoff thing.
Yes.
And they're just, as all well-made tools, they are just a joy to use.
Yay. Oh,
because they fit your hand nicely and they function.
I should stop being quite so sniffy.
But having said that,
there is a school of thought out there that says using copper tools in your garden helps with the electromagnetic currents that your plants use to grow and to communicate with other plants. Now, there's a bunch of reasons that you'd use copper in the garden. The other thing is slugs. Apparently slugs, I got told that slugs wouldn't cross copper. So if you put a ring of copper around your plants, they wouldn't cross it. I can tell you for a fact that is a fib.
Okay.
Because slugs don't give a toss about copper. They just scoot straight across it.
Yeah,
there's not many things that'll stop a determined slug when it's heading for your tomato plants or whatever. But the whole copper thing is about electricity. It's about electromagnetism and conductivity in your garden with the moisture that's in your garden and the activity of your plants as they interact with the soil.
See, I can't find any scientific papers on this.
Neither can I.
No.
But I just like the tools.
Okay, which is good. which is really good. I'm not going to say it doesn't work. Because I would be very, as a scientist, you can't say, oh, for goodness sake, that's just a heap of poop. But I'd like to see some scientific research on that that proves whether it actually does or doesn't work.
I have an open mind about things like this, because to be honest, you know, people poo-pooed Darwin.
Oh yeah, absolutely. This is
you know, because everybody knew.
Yeah, everybody knew the world was flat
back in the day. Yeah, and so I have an open mind. There are bound to be things out there that, when you look at them on the surface, you go, really? But actually,
yeah, it can come.
There are more things.
But not, you mentioned electro
gardening. That's a bit of a thing at the moment. So. Come this way for some magic beans. This is the little pole, a little copper pole that you can put into your garden.
That's the rod with the copper wound round.
And
it,
I think that's
it?
Supposed to sort out the geoengineering spraying thingies as well. You know, there's a whole weird thing going on there with vinegar in your garden and bowls and clearing away the clouds.
Into. Now we've lost you.
Oh, sorry.
That's
Me. That's a shocker, that little moment.
Yeah, same thing though. It's all to do with the electromagnetism in the soil and the moisture in the soil and the interaction with the plants.
Are you channeling something from the sky?
Possibly.
I think this is a biodynamic
thing. And I think that's why
they
have to be
pointing up. Indeed.
Personally, that's. I'm prepared to be convinced, but that's a step too far down the woo-woo road for me, because I can't see how that would work. Doesn't mean to say it doesn't work, but at the moment with the information that I have, I'm looking at that and going, no, I don't think so.
But now, listen,
I could be wrong.
Sorry, this is really, my mind jumps, you know, when you talk, because I've got a very loose mind at the moment. Anyway, a house earthing pole. Why do they put it outside? Why do you need an earthing pole?
In case lightning. Is it lightning?
It's lightning and electricity, because all your electrical plug sockets have an earth in them, the little green.
So, but why into the earth?
Because that's what power does. It drains away to earth. When you say you earth something, you allow that, particularly lightning discharge and electricity, static electricity, whatever it is, somewhere, to go somewhere. Power has to go somewhere.
So my garden near the earthing pole should be doing very well. Making a jump in.
If all that's true, you are leaping to conclusions here, aren't you?
That's a good question. I'm not sure worms like it when lightning hits the ground.
No.
They get a bit sniggly.
No.
I've seen a tree split with lightning. Yeah. You know, we used to get these terrible storms.
I think the lightning issue is obviously quite severe when it's coming down. I think the channeling with the copper into the ground is more about celestial energy coming from space. Those are the alien space libraries, I think. I think that's what that's all about.
Honestly, I don't know enough about it to be able to make a comment.
I've looked into the biodynamic thingy, and it's all a bit kind of alien space libraries, you know, and a lot of stuff that's coming down from, you know, if you go right back into these things. And
do you know what? I'm just going to have to go home now, comb through the internet, find some really good persuasive scientific papers about biodynamics and just bring them round to your house.
I'd love to see them, because I haven't found any as yet.
Okay, you know,
there's not a lot.
These ideas often are taken up by, I'm going to say, ordinary people, because it's a bit like conspiracy theories. Yeah. You know, someone's heard something that, and there's a gap in knowledge, and they fill it with this idea, and the idea takes root.
I think with gardening, it's about trust. You know, there's three main reasons why people believe in conspiracy theories and magic and woo-woo and things. And it's either wanting to be part of a tribe, wanting to have extra knowledge, you know, I know more than anybody else, or I trust the person that told me.
Yes.
You know, and if, with gardening, it's often I trust the person that told me.
Right.
Here's somebody with a beautiful garden. They told me to stick these copper poles in my garden, or whack a copper nail into a tree, and it kind of worked. So, I think there's a lot of that kind of thing that goes on.
Yes, well, people tell you things and, oh, I must try it, and it looks
yeah,
better. And
yeah, all
But why wouldn't you? Honestly, if you have an issue that you try, or even if it's not an issue, even if it's something that can just generally make your garden better, what have you got to lose? If you try it and it doesn't work, then you don't carry on doing it.
Well, you know, when the
well, yes.
I mean, one cow for three magic beans. So, you might be quite careful.
There we are. I want those magic beans. But, when we did organics, we talked all about it, and I can't remember the name, but there is a big experiment that's going on called, I think it's the Hawthorne, somewhere in England. This woman has planted two fields, one organic, and what they're trying to prove is there a difference in the nutritional value of organic compared to fertilized, things. And it's the answer's still out there. Well, they haven't actually proven one or the other yet.
Now, I think one of the reasons for that, I was involved in some of these trials when I was at university. And they were trying to show that organic kiwi fruit had a higher calcium level, and that's why they stored better. And that was the hypothesis. When they did the trials and things, they came up and they said, didn't make any difference at all, and the storage wasn't any better, and they didn't seem to have any different mineral content or whatever. But the farmers who were, the organic farmers, absolutely swore by it, the kiwi fruit people. So the jury was absolutely out on that. One of my issues with some of these things when they're saying that there's higher nutrient content and things is I don't think our tests are good enough. Okay. I think sometimes the science has to catch up. We can't say definitively it doesn't work.
Yeah.
It didn't work for that trial, and our scientific methods of measuring the different, the different nutrient density and bits and pieces. So I think we just need to wait for the science to catch up on that particular moment.
Right, so it's not...
The jury's still out at that moment. Yeah.
And I think it's the same with a lot of the biodynamics, the stuff you call the woo-woo, If we have no way to measure it, it's going to stay out there in the woo-woo zone until we get to a point where we can actually definitively apply that scientific method and say, does this work or not?
Yeah.
Does and under what conditions does this work?
Yes.
Which is another important thing, you can't use it generally. An idea can work in one area, but not very well in somewhere else.
Do you remember the big maxi crop trials they had? You might not remember that. You might not have been in New Zealand. Back in the 80s, we had a seaweed concentrate that the fertiliser companies were going. It's all under, and it was called maxi crop. And it was basically just a seaweed extract. And the fertiliser companies go, oh, this is absolutely magnificent, da, da, da. And the people were going, really? Where's the scientific trial? So they did a scientific trial, and they had rather a lush field, and they had maxi crop this side, nothing on the other side. And there was no difference. And when I looked at that, I thought, oh, that's a bit suspicious. You should have replicated it over a lot more farmers. Mm. You needed at least 10 farmers. You needed a whole different areas. Because if there wasn't anything missing in the nutrition in those soils, and the soil did look, all the plants looked pretty lush and green, you kind of thought if there wasn't actually a deficit that the maxi crop was fixing with the trace minerals,
then there wouldn't be any difference.
Mm. And I thought that was quite an unfair trial in my mind.
The one that also quite contentious in your mind is biochar.
Yes,
am I throwing this into through the...
That's okay. We can come back. Now, the only reasons I have an issue with this, with biochar, because we can have a whole program on biochar, which is all quite interesting. My issues are that when I ask the biochar people for some scientific evidence, they brush me off.
Mm.
And I'm going, I'd like to see some trials on this. And they go, no. there was one the other day where I posted and I said, okay, that's great. Fantastic. Glad to see your corn's doing so well. What was your control group? And I got deleted because they didn't want to. And then another post came up and they said, look, I put biochar over my whole garden because I didn't want to deny my plants. And I'm going, oh,
it sounds like
I'm really sorry. We need a little bit more on that. I just want a little bit more scientific rigor in these claims. If we're going to be spending an awful lot of money and they're talking about putting carbon back in the soil and sequestration and things, and you've got to come up with the science on behind it.
I think you've hit the nail, copper or otherwise, on the head there with that. Follow the money. As with all things, follow the money.
And
if somebody's trying to sell you something
yep.
at a silly amount of money and making outrageous claims about it, as with all things, chances are, if it's too good to be true, it probably
it
is.
Too good.
If some, if, most of the gardening people that I know locally swap and exchange things for free. We give each other plants and seeds and all sorts of things, and it's all done on a for free basis. Nobody makes any money out of any of this.
But in our conversations all the times, we mention things like compost, you know, mulching, all that, which isn't costly. You're not, if you do your gardening, you've got that stuff, you know, and I'm sure if you're looking after your soil, you don't have to go into all these woo-woo things, is it?
Well,
but
some soils are naturally deficient in certain minerals.
Okay. Yes.
So you would you would be addressing that deficit. And over time, the soil profile changes too. As you grow your vegetables and you put your compost in, and over time, the pH might change and the composition of the soil might change. So you have to be on top of that. You have to be looking at that and going, what is... Yeah, is everything still there that we need to be there?
Yeah. Does that mean testing your soil all the time?
Yeah, you can do. Yeah. Personally, I don't. Personally,
no,
Personally, I just look at it and pick it up and crumble it. And if it looks a really good colour and it crumbles nicely and it's got good structure, I'm all good to go.
Yeah. You can look at the plants as well. You know, certain deficiencies show up in the leaves of your plants or certain types of plants. So
yes, they do.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're always a good indicator. Things like tomatoes and things are always a good indicator of what's happening with the soil.
Yeah. Yeah. And just keeping your soil healthy as possible.
Yeah.
We won't go into too many other things. We can sum it up now. Science is a very important side of gardening. You know, test, proven or unproven.
Yeah, having a control group is the pivotal moment of science.
But keep an open mind.
And keep an open mind. That's also the part of science. Science never says this is an absolute.
Yeah.
This is absolutely true and this is absolutely false. This is our hypothesis and we proved it. Doesn't necessarily mean it was right or wrong, but it is a bit like faith healing, really, isn't it?
Yes.
It's what you really, you know, you need more than just
more
faith.
Proof, yeah.
You need more proof.
Yeah.
But especially if you're making
that money. Other side of it, what you say, you know, be careful of following a thing that costs too much and promises too much.
Yes.
And talk to your neighbours. And look at what's growing around you.
Absolutely.
And don't whack copper nails into things.
Okay, everyone. Thanks so much for today. It's been a bit of an interesting woo-woo day. But stuff we can follow up on.
Yep.
Yes, absolutely. Yep.
Thanks a lot.